Hello, Kurt. Happy Monday.
We are back. Did you have a good weekend? Have you not left New York since I last talked to you? Because you look like you're in the same place.
I am back. I did go home. I was home for the weekend. Saw Devil Wears Prada 2. Fantastic movie.
I'm going to see that later today, actually. Is it good?
It's really good. I really liked it. Yeah, it was really fun.
Wait, are you in New York to go to the Met Gala?
No. Yeah, right. No.
Oh, you're boycotting it. You're boycotting like all the celebs are considering doing because of the Bezos thing, right?
Me and Kim Kardashian, yes.
Oh, look at you, trendsetter.
Speaking of New York, Mayor Rudy Giuliani, former New York mayor, is in critical condition, we're hearing, and has been in the ICU, might still be in the ICU in Florida. And unfortunately, it's kind of bringing out the worst in people again.
What is it with people being sick and dying that brings out the worst in everybody? Usually, it used to bring out the best in people.
Right. Yeah. Instead of it's don't speak ill of the dead, people are going out there saying, oh, you know, get your chance in now. It's absolutely disgusting. I mean,
wow.
Rudy Giuliani was the mayor of New York City on 9/11.
And America's
mayor. We grew up in a generation that understood the role he played, not only in the city, but in the country, in one of the most monumental moments our nation has ever seen. And to see people so disrespectful of his tenure, of his career, of his life in general is absolutely disgusting. And remember, Rudy Giuliani is the man who brought down the mob in New York. If you go back to his prosecutor days, he has a storied career.
There's a great movie, actually, a biopic that where James Gandolfini played him way back in the day. That's worth a watch, actually, on that chapter of his life. I get it. On one hand, like if you are from a ideological place where you think that everything Rudy Giuliani has done in the last 15 years has been, you know, horrific, like you're certainly not, you know, whitewashing that over. You know, I think that when someone's in critical condition in an ICU, that's not the time to dunk on someone. I feel that way in general. Like, I despise the majority of people who are in power right now. If they were in an ICU, I would not take that moment to dunk on them. Like, it's on some level, they are human beings. They have families. They have loved ones. There are people who are legitimately concerned for their well-being. You can have a debate about someone's legacy, you know, afterwards. And to me, that's a fair conversation to have when that time comes. But like, man, the guy's in the ICU. It's like, let's for a second practice what we preach a lot of the times. You know, we talk about being better humans. We talk about wishing. If you're a Democrat, you talk a lot about wanting Republicans to be, you know, more classy, we'll say, about certain things. Like when, a certain former FBI director dies and Donald Trump puts out something about him being dead. We say like, hey, that's not appropriate. Like, okay, if that's true, which I believe it is, you got to also uphold that standard. You know, even if someone that you disagree with vehemently is in a situation, like if you start dunking on someone, then like, okay, well, when they do it to you, you don't get to cry about it.
Well, yeah. And I mean, it's almost like people forgot at the basic level, we're all human, right? These multiple assassination attempts on Donald Trump's life. He's a father, a husband, a grandfather. He's a brother. He has a whole family and a life around him. And people forget in politics as we go through and share big opinions and disagree vehemently about the direction and what we should do as a country. People forget that there are people behind that still,
right?
That you and I are people, that our friends are people, that people in our industry are real. And at the end of the day, part of what this podcast is about is that you and I can absolutely vehemently disagree about the direction our country should go and how we get there. But that doesn't mean we're going to attack each other personally. That doesn't mean we're going to be disagreeable for the sake of being disagreeable. And I think that maybe just right now, the whole country can just take a whole beat and think to itself, everybody else is a person too.
And that's interesting. I have to ask you this because, you know, we both, you know, we do a lot of cable news and we've been on many segments that can get confrontational, spicy, personal, can go off the rails a little bit. What was your take on the whole Scott Jennings, Adam Mockler thing that blew up? Like, one, do you think we should be allowed to curse on TV? Two, have you ever come close to cursing on TV?
No, I've never come close to cursing on TV. I don't think you should need to. They're unnecessary words to the conversation and argument you might be having. So I don't. It's not how I communicate. I think like the worst thing I've ever said on TV once was batshit.
Oh, yeah. And, okay. Like, okay. Yeah. Yeah. Like, that fits a lot of the time.
Right. You know what I mean? But that's like the rowdiest I've gotten.
Hmm.
And listen, I can understand there is a lot of frustration that goes into doing some shows sometimes. I've never popped off and been like, get your finger out of my face. But I can understand sometimes, and I'm sure you can too, Kurt, where you just hit a boiling point and you're like, it's enough. Like,
yeah,
you gotta get out of my way a little bit. But, you know, it's not always easy doing what we do and doing what Scott does at the level that everybody does it to not get a little frustrated sometimes.
Yeah, I think the closest, like, I've called someone a douchebag before, which I don't consider a curse word, but some people do. I don't know. I called someone a douchebag once.
That's not a nice thing to say to somebody.
No, it wasn't nice, but it wasn't like I dropped the F-bomb. I think I've said batshit crazy before because I think it's just, I think it's an appropriate adjective for the times that we are in often. I did tell someone to shut up once when they were talking over me. I just said, would you shut up? But that's about it. Like I've never come close to dropping the F-bomb. I can say that. And if anything, it's like sometimes when you're, the trouble I have is when you're quoting someone else who may have used an expletive and trying to figure out how to like capture accurately what they said without going over the line, whatever that line is. But the FCC chair did say cursing is allowed. So, you know, I don't know.
Well, anyways, hopefully the whole country can kind of come together a little bit better in this moment.
Speaking of coming together, you were reading something about Pennsylvania this morning.
Yes, what a bipartisan moment, huh? Josh Shapiro going in to support the Republican in the 2024 race to get back at Democrats for kind of sucking, huh?
Vengeance.
Hey, listen, I carry a grudge like I carry a handbag every day of my life. Like,
just ask Joe Morelli.
We will do a whole Joe Morelli special
with our special friend Michael Star Hopkins joining us.
We will, but like that, you know, like to be outed, but to be outed by your friend who was talking to college students. You know what this really does teach people? And if you haven't seen the reporting, go to Axios. They broke the news on this. It was a recording of an associate of Governor Shapiro's in a college classroom talking to students about the campaign and about the election cycle. And he got a little too comfortable, it seems, or maybe he was okay with that and it got out.
It kids teaches you.
It reminds you every time. Everybody's always recording all of the time. There is no such thing as off the record or private.
There is no
or
privacy.
Not to be shared. It just doesn't exist. And love it or lump it, and plenty of reasons to hate it. It's a ridiculous, you know, premise sometimes. Sure. But like, he got a little loose lips, and now
loose lips Shapiro sink ships.
Yeah, he seems a little petty. Which don't get me wrong, I am a petty queen. Like I get it.
Yeah, but I mean, can we let's just all be honest here for a second. Most politicians are petty. Most politicians know how to hold a grudge and delight in extracting that revenge or vengeance. There's that part of me that who has been in the Democrats City show a spying club for as they've come up against this aggressive testosterone laden form of MAGAism here over the last 5 years.
Oh, testosterone laden.
And it's like, hey, you know what? I'm okay with Shapiro like showing like, yeah, you I'm going to curse out because it's a podcast. You fuck with me, I'm going to fuck with you right back. I got no problem with that. Like, good for you. Like, and to all the Democrats who are whining about it this morning, like, listen, if you think you're going to be able to roll in and play the when they go low, we go high ballad that has not worked for you for a very long time now. It's like, you need someone who can throw an elbow. You need someone who's like, yeah, I'm not going to take this shit, even from especially from my own party. Aren't Democrats always saying, I wish Republicans would police their party better than, It's like, this guy said, hey, you got out of line and I'm not going to help you. And in fact, I'm going to undermine you. Like, screw partisanship. This got personal and I threw an elbow. Okay. I don't actually have a problem with that.
I agree with you. And I can say, I don't think that this is going to matter in the long run to Josh Shapiro at all. I don't think that it hinders anything. I don't think it sinks anything. I don't think it changes anything for him. I just love that, like, everybody can kind of get a little bit of a sense for once about how the games are actually played behind the scenes. Because I can guarantee you, he was probably not the only Democrat in the country who did something similar if they felt slighted the last cycle. I mean, undercutting is like, you want to win. Like, this is a competitive industry and people are brutal and they want to win. And it's a bunch of gym class heroes right now.
I mean, this is why, like, we've seen time and again on both sides here. Like when the DCCC or the NRCC under the radar helps bolster a more extreme candidate in a primary because they think, oh, we could probably beat them in the general. It's like this, like, yeah, we're like, this shit happens constantly. And if you can't take it and you're crying and whining about it, like, go do something else. Cause like, this is the NFL. GTFO. We hit hard.
Yeah.
Like
the NFL.
Yeah. For children and crybabies, really.
For people that were not very popular in high school. That's what it is. Oh, it's the NFL that, for that's people the who never made truth. The football team.
These are the ones who got cut, who got trash canned, who got bullied, who like yeah. never were at the cool kids table. So they went and created their own mm-hmm. nerdy cool kids table. That's exactly what most of these political people are. And I agree
now they
you.
Have power.
Yeah. Yeah. Hence why they're so vengeful and angry all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm telling you, like, Josh Shapiro ain't the only one. And if you're a Democrat, and you're going to hold that against him. Grow the fuck up. That's my comment.
Woo! Okay. Then let's look ahead. Speaking of holding grudges and what could happen down the road, what are we seeing in the predictions on old word salad chef Kamala?
So this was interesting, and it's why it happened that I find more interesting. So her likelihood to run for president in 2028 dropped to 50% after peaking. It was at 63% 3 or 4 days ago. Now it dropped to 50. And the reason why is because it came out this week that she had purchased or acquired a multimillion-dollar property in Malibu. And so people,
no
I guess, are guesstimating that, well, if you're going to go live that life, you're not probably going to run for the Democratic nomination for president of the United States. So I don't know if there's any credence to that or not, but I thought that was kind of interesting.
I love a little tea leaves moment, right? Like, it's yeah. just like, oh, she bought a house. Oh, this could mean any number of things. Also, Kamala Public Service. Hey, girl, way to cash them checks. Hey, I mean, giving Nancy
no
Pelosi a run for
money.
Her money. I mean, this woman did just come out of the White House a year and a half ago
yep.
and now just bought a multi-million-dollar home in Malibu. The paycheck ain't bad, huh?
Hey, I mean, we're watching the first family make hundreds of millions of dollars while they're in office. I don't have a problem with the Democrat getting some after
I mean,
left.
just because the president had business holdings and his kids still do. I mean, listen.
Hey, I got no problem having business holdings. It's when you're trying to get government contracts through those companies that I go, that might be a little sketchy, but we'll save that debate for another day. here, back in my backyard of Texas, James Tallarico's odds of winning the Texas Senate race has jumped to an all-time high of 46%. He just gave a commencement address the other day here in Dallas that was widely received as positive. I have maintained the entire time this is not Beto O'Rourke. I know some people call it Beto 2.0. I think he is far more talented than Beto as a retail politician, like just watching him campaign here in Texas. And I think that Republicans are right to take it seriously. This is not a brush off. We're going to cakewalk through this. Like Republicans could lose this race if they don't play it right.
For Tallarico, what you're seeing, though, and what Democrats have always seen is they spent a lot of money. And you saw it with Allred. You saw it with Beto previously, where they have spent millions and millions of dollars and really kind of lit it on fire in some ways, trying to chase flipping those seats in Texas. The demographics have moved. We know that Latino vote can be very swing heavy, especially in Texas. Mm-hmm. Even that money that Democrats spent previously for unsuccessful races lays the groundwork of investment for somebody yeah. like a Tallarico or somebody down the road to try and make a really competitive run or even flip the seat. Again, I don't see that happening this cycle, even if Tallarico is a very good candidate by most measures of Democrats. I still don't think it happens. I still think that this is a Republican kept seat, but mm-hmm. I see that like he can make it more interesting. He can certainly yeah. make it more competitive, but that doesn't mean it's actually going to happen. And sure. I think that for him, he will get a lot of notoriety. It's just a matter of how well he can keep himself from getting pulled too far to the left to see how far he goes forward in 28. Because I wouldn't be surprised if even he loses, his name doesn't start showing up in conversations for 28. Is he 35?
Yeah.
I was going to say, he looks really young. I don't even know how
he
old
looks
he
young,
is.
But yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think the thing here, too, is if he runs an effective campaign and gets it closer than we've seen in recent modern day history, the net effect will be it will help Democrats some of these congressional races, you know, and keep that
strong
enthusiasm.
Yeah,
we just had a couple of elections here in the outskirts of Dallas, some of the suburbs. And in those elections over the weekend, like even like at the school board level, where conservatives won seats off of the, you know, book bans and transgender, like those seats flipped back to Democrat this time down. Like, you know, we're seeing at the very least a turnout enthusiasm gap here. Mm-hmm. And again, that may not be enough on itself to get Tallarico over the finish line, but it will be enough to for any of these swing seats, I think, in the House side to break Democrat way just on a coat. I think Tallarico will have legit coattails. I don't think Cornyn and Paxton will.
Well, I don't know if I agree with that, but I think your point is correct, probably on enthusiasm about Democrats being more enthused, more activated, more engaged right now. Democrats have also become the higher propensity voter. So yeah, you couple all that together. Yeah, I can definitely see it. What else are the prediction markets telling us now?
Oh, so this is, you know, speaking of 2028, Tucker Carlson has a 54% chance to run for the 2028 Republican presidential election. And he is now third behind J.D. Vance, Marco Rubio, in who they think, the markets think, will actually be the nominee. Obviously, Tucker making a lot of news the last few weeks, you know, breaking from Trump in some ways, being certainly much more vocally critical, had this big sit down over the weekend. In much more legacy mainstream media circles that's been circulating. What's going on with Tucker? What do you think? Can he be the Republican nominee? Do you think he's going to run?
Never say never. That is going to be my first answer here. Anybody who says, like, no, Tucker Carlson will never run, that'll never happen, tell yourself that 15 years ago and to put the name as Donald J. Trump, right? Like, like you don't need to, like, think it's so far-fetched that it would not happen. And again, like, I can't even say, like, definitively he couldn't become the party's nominee, right? That's not to say, like, listen, if you've got grassroots on your side, I mean, that's a lot of what propelled Trump through his first nomination process, and you're able to bring in money and be able to stay up on the airwaves and stay competitive and go across the country. I mean, those early days, it's a lot of name ID and it's a lot of ability to get those kind of local generated headlines in those local, you know, in those early voting primary states. Do I think Tucker runs? I mean, maybe, but I'm not going to rule it out. I'm not going to rule anything out. And that's, you know, because if you've learned anything in American politics, it's don't rule it out.
You know what I'd love to see happen? If I were creating a TV show brain, I would love Tucker to run. And I'd love Jon Stewart to run. And I'd love for them to end up having to face each other and debate one another, given the very story history those two have.
That would be epic.
I mean, if I were Republican, I would not want to be in a debate stage with Tucker Carlson. Like, I think, like, and that format, Tucker would whoop their ass.
He's a very good debater. He's always well prepared. It's also his delivery, where it's that kind of dismissive laugh of his,
yeah,
that knocks people off their base, especially in a debate format. It, like, presidential debates are a whole different beast to prep for. Debates in themselves are, but to be part of that also means you have to prep for the other people on stage. And it would be funny to see who would play Tucker in each of those debate preps for people that would be running in 2028. Because that's a hard one.
Who would you be good to play in debate prep? Who would you cast yourself as if you were doing debate prep?
I mean, I have done debate prep as, like, men against other candidates before, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, no, I don't know. You know, it was funny because when we were talking in the very first part of this on the first topic about James Gandolfini playing Rudy Giuliani, yeah, I thought to myself, like, Kurt, who would you have play you in a biopic? And now you're like, Aaron, who would you stand in for in a debate? And we're always just trying to find other people to play in lives.
I would have Simu Lee play me.
Ooh. I don't 100%. Know who I would have.
Who would play Aaron McGuire in the Aaron McGuire biopic?
I don't know.
Be continued.
Saoirse Ronan's, like, one of my favorite actresses, but I don't think we look that much alike.
All right. We'll see if we can make this happen.
I think the most
Irish
actress I could find as well.
Okay, that's fair. That makes sense. Lastly, in the prediction market space, actually, members and staff are banned from prediction markets. You were reading a story about that earlier today as well, I think.
Yeah, unanimous consent agreement in the chambers of Congress that say that members and staff can't be on prediction markets. You're seeing more of that now, where people are starting to get ahead of this because they might have inside information. Man, how quick they were, though, to get on those prediction markets, and how much money Nancy Pelosi has made on the stock market. You would think Congress could move a little faster to actually stop inside trading the way it has versus getting ahead on these prediction markets. Like,
this is
they
why
were so
I
quick
have
to act here.
I have no appetite for what any of these fools think about the prediction markets until you actually police and pass like the Stock Act. It's like, come on. Like, I don't care if you place a bet about something random. I care about the fact that you're literally allowed to trade stocks and equities on inside information and you have not self-policed yourselves in any way on that. Like, that's what's egregious.
And I also think if you and I have learned anything, it's that Congress should not self-police itself on almost anything.
Because they can't do it. They're horrible at it.
They're not good at it. So I applaud that. Like, I get what they're trying to do. I think it's a smart move. Don't leave room for questions of impropriety. Don't leave that opportunity either. So the same way you don't allow TikTok on government, you know, devices, you know, the same way that, like, they do get ahead of themselves to try and self-police things that they, you know, right? TikTok obviously is different because they're worried about the Chinese alignment on that app and getting access to, inside information in people's technology versus this. But I appreciate a little bit of self-policing. I just wish Congress was actually pretty good at it. And they're not.
No shit. I wish they would apply it to other things like stock trading and sexual harassment. But be that as it may, speaking of self-policing, a lot of drama going on at the DNC breaking over the weekend, which I'm sure you're delighting at.
Listen, a little Dem on Dem food fight. I'm not going to stop you guys. You guys, you go off on each other. Dem on Dem violence. Whoop.
Like, there's this chatter. And
proverbial violence, not actual violence.
Nobody... Yes, obviously, we don't advocate actual violence here. We're a family show, dang it. My cursing not aside. I think that, Ken Martin's chair of the DNC has been pretty much under, scrutiny the entire time that he's been chair. There's been, a lot of consternation about the job that he's doing. Obviously, the decision not to release the famed 2024 autopsy report has create a lot of consternation, understandably so. It's like, it's kind of hard to go, I want you to give me money. Oh, by the way, that thing we promised we would let you know about what we didn't do right last time, we're not going to show you. That does not breed confidence in your organization. But
Dems have been massively out fundraised right now. Republicans have an unbelievable cash on hand advantage going into these midterms. And that's a huge pressure point right now for Ken Martin, is that Democrats are like, we need the resources to be able to win. And they don't think he's the guy to get them there.
Yeah. The problem with Democrats, who are some of the folks who are behind the scenes that were potentially considering a maneuver to oust him, who replaces him? And that's my thing. And I've said this before.
Yeah.
When Republicans are going through leadership crises in the House, it's like, it's not enough to say, I don't like John Boehner or Kevin McCarthy or Paul Ryan or whoever. It's, well, who are you going to get to replace him? Well, that is how you end up with Mike Johnson on like the 15th ballot being the guy that no one ever heard of becoming Speaker of the House. It's like, if you're going to get rid of Ken Martin, especially, as we are coming up on a massive election, who is going to do the job after? It's not enough to just get rid of the guy. You got to have a vision for who replaces him. And unless you can't articulate that, it makes zero sense to just, get rid of someone for the sake of getting rid of someone.
And also, they're just driving these negative headlines right now, right? Like, this is all unnecessary, like, internal consternation without a viable option away. So all it is complaining into the wind right now that Dems don't like their own leadership. And so they're not offering a different opportunity. Man, if this isn't a microcosm of the Democrat Party, this really is, right? They're all complaining about it, but then they don't offer any actual policy or position or opportunity to choose otherwise. They're just like, dang, that stinks. Yeah.
Well, we're consistent, if anything.
Well,
I wish,
buddy,
I had a good comeback for that one, but I really don't, because it's so true, which is what drives me nuts, which is why I try to come up with solutions and ideas. They don't listen to me very often.
Oh,
much to your side's benefit. Okay, I'll do it. Well, I will be DNC chair. Let it be known. Hey, I am throwing my head out there. If you want to get rid of Ken Martin, I will step up, do the job, and I will run roughshod over the Republican Party in 2026.
Good luck with your campaign.
That's all I got. I got nothing but WWE promos to give. What you gonna do?
Oh, boy. All right. Well, what we're going to do is be back on Thursday.
Are you going to still be in New York at the hotel motel?
No, I should be home. I should be back in Virginia, back in the
your
D.C.
dog's
area.
Missing you, so this is you're an absentee mom right now.
They're living the high life, though. They're hanging out with Connor, and that's always the better person to hang out with.
No rules.
No rules.
Anything goes.
Exactly. All right,
I'll
great
see
review,
you Thursday.
Subscribe.
Oh yeah, like us, like us, please, like us, subscribe, comment, post, all the things.
All the things.
All right, I'll see you.